Golf Smarter number 207 for December 1, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
The perfect golf swing. Is it really that important?
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's show is brought to you by Golf Smarter for members only. Stay tuned because after our conversation with John Grund, we'll announce our winner of a free membership and a new promotion on how to get a membership for yourself this holiday season. Our guest today is another example of the type of personality that I really enjoy introducing you to. To me, there are so many heroes of golf that we never hear about, and John Grund may simply be one of those heroes. He's won over 200 tournaments, has played in and led a U.S. Open, is an excellent instructor, and manufactures a product that most of you likely use every time that you're out on the course. John and I met for this recording session at a driving range with the hopes of taking advantage of his skills to analyze different players' swings, but we covered so much information that we didn't talk about anyone's specific swings, and the conversation lasted long enough for two full episodes. So we'll conclude it next week on a members-only podcast. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, John.
Well, good to be here.
You and I had a great conversation the other day. We were planning on sitting down, having lunch, and then do a recording. And 2 hours into lunch, we both had to go and went, oh, but we didn't record.
Exactly.
So we're going to take a second shot at it here.
Thanks,
and you know, for the amateur golfer, and a lot about what we talked about, we started out in our conversation looking at a Golf Digest magazine.
Right.
And you were going over some pictures, and you were analyzing them, and you were making charts, and you were drawing lines and things. And I had trouble relating to a lot of it.
Absolutely.
Because I'm the recreational golfer.
Correct.
I'm not a touring pro. I'm not even a competitive player.
Correct. Okay.
And so I like to take a look at it, at golf from... It seems like a different viewpoint than a lot of not only teaching professionals, but even stuff that I see on the Golf Channel.
Right.
As a mid-handicap player who doesn't get to play out, you know, play as much as I want and doesn't get to practice as much as I'd like, too. So when
correct.
I have time, I'm not going to the driving range. I'm going to the, you know, I'm going to go play golf.
Right. Well, let me clarify what we did a little bit at lunch, which was, I was breaking down a golf swing based upon what is now basically the classical theory of how to hit a golf ball. And that theory says the club moves around my body on an inclined plane, and the shaft and the club face relate to my target and to my target line. So that's all I was really doing. There's not a theory whether it's stack or tilt or whether it's the golfing machine or whether it's... Hank Haney or any Ledbetter, they're all basically doing, all the good instructors do that. They have different ways of approaching that concept, but at the end of the day, that's where modern teaching is at. However, a good professional doesn't need to impart all that information to you. For your viewers, this would be something I think could be of benefit to them. A good golf lesson, in my opinion, is one and where you, the student, or a student comes to me and says, hi, I'm so-and-so. And if he's not forthcoming, the pro should say, tell me a little bit about your golf game. Tell me a little bit about you. Then the student says, blah, blah, blah. And hopefully at some point he's going to say, and my real problem is, so...
And now, don't the amateurs always come out with, I want to be more consistent? Isn't that basically what we all say?
You know, yeah, I think they, in a sense, they'll sometimes say, yeah, I'm not very consistent, or, you know, but it's usually, I always do this. I always feel like I'm, you know, hitting the ball right, or I'm always hooking the ball left, or I can't hit it high enough or something. So I only say that from my perspective as a golf professional says that because in your 30 minutes or 45 minutes or hour or whatever you're going to spend with the student, you want to have him feel like he's left the lesson with some value. Mm-hmm. So the thing what we're trying to do is we're trying to clarify some objectives very quickly. so that we can feel like he leaves with some information that helps him solve those problems or problem. And that's my point. It usually should be a problem, not multiple problems that you're trying to solve in one golf lesson. So now I get to, now and then I also, by the way, the teacher should by at some point briefly in there say, tell me a little about your physical history. What's going on with your body? That's sort of a new frontier in golf, is that we all come with the game, come to the game with some sort of issues. We're all human beings, and with our backs, shoulders, necks. Hey, I was in a car accident 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and I've got 20% rotation on my right side or whatever if you spent some time in physical therapy. And a good teaching pro can actually sit you down on a bench, have you do a few motions, and kind of see where your body's capable of doing. And also maybe watching you hit a few golf balls, maybe be able to tell that. But that should be part of it sometimes during a golf lesson,
sure.
So establishing that. So then I get to watch a student hit golf balls, and we're talking about his issue, whatever it may be. And the interesting thing is what he thinks the issue is usually not the source of the problem.
How do you convince them of the fact that, you know, because then they may walk away going, well, I didn't address what I needed to take care of.
Well, you do it. You can either do it subtly or you can do it very frankly, depending on the student. And that's mm-hmm. a little bit of being the cagey golf pro, you know, kind of reading your student. Is this a person that can handle, you can't handle the truth. You know what I mean?
Well, is that what the function of a good caddy is?
Well, of course, you know, that would be a good caddy too. Yeah. But, he's, you know, we're in a different relationship here. He's come to me as the expert. So
right.
Usually what I try to do is if we're going to use some video, that usually is a pretty good way to point out the issues here.
Mm-hmm.
And also to help them understand cause and effect. That's a real basic concept in golf that's often overlooked. Jack Nicklaus did it in Golf My Way. By the way, just to throw out books every golfer should read.
Go ahead.
Five Easy Lessons
mm-hmm.
by Ben Hogan. Golf My Way by Jack Nicklaus. And then there's several others that kind of fall under the pretty good category. Ledbetter's book that he did with Faldo is pretty good. Bobby Jones's book, I think it's called Down the Fairway or something, Down the Fairway. It's been a while since I've read it. But I would say Bobby Jones' book, Hogan's book, and Nicklaus's book are always good books to read. And the reason is, they're all for different reasons, really. Hogan's really is the basic fundamental principles of how to hit a golf ball. That is the essence of all modern teaching. Nicklaus combined good principles on how to hit a golf ball, but also added a little bit of caginess of what Jack is really good at doing. He's able to kind of break it down to some core elements, and one of them, which I was bringing up, was cause and effect. He talks about it. It's a good part of his book, and in one chapter, I think, of why a ball spins the way it does. Why does the ball go up? Why does the ball go left? Why does the ball go right? Mm-hmm. And that's really good for the golfer to understand. And when I can clarify that and show them as the club moves along this inclined area around my body and see why the ball goes right or why the ball goes left, it helps them. It breaks down some barriers, some myths, so to speak, of why things do what they do when the golf ball goes certain places. People always say, well, I lifted my head up. That's often a common one. The reality is their head didn't really lift up. Their spine moved up and down. Mm. We think it's our head.
Yeah, right.
The problem is if you really focus on your head, you get person too rigid, and they get too tense. And so, you know, like I've always told people often in my lessons, you know, and oftentimes I'll shock them. Good way to get people if there's attention is to shock them and say, you know, the three worst, couple of the worst golf lessons ever was keep your left arm straight, keep your head still, and I forget, you know, one other one, I forget what it is. But basically those two, they go, what do you mean? I'm supposed to keep my left arm straight. I'm supposed to keep my head still. And I show them that the left arm straight is usually a result of a good pivot. An inward motion produces an outward force. If I hold a rope and spin it, like hold my hand in front of me with a rope, which I often teach with, and I spin my wrist, I see a rope spinning around my wrist, and the rope is staying straight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the rope has no knowledge of how to stay straight. Why does a rope stay straight? Because an inward force is making it extend outwards, right? So centrifugal force is pulling the end of that rope out away from me. Because an inward force is from the middle, if I break down the inward force of that motion, then it becomes floppy, and it doesn't stay shooting straight out. So the left arm is often a result of that inward pivot, that inward motion. That's why left arm stays straight.
Wow.
If I show them that most good golf swings have three centers, they start out in the center. They move back to the right, what I call the right center, back to center to dress, and then over to the left center at the finish. Now, there are some new tenets in golf that claim that isn't as true as it could be, and maybe not. But there are a lot of golf swings that have been very successful doing that, technically. So, you know, you can go through a lot of stuff, but you don't have to overkill it. You just want to identify that problem for that student, clarify it in his own mind, and then hopefully you solve that. That's what a good golf lesson should be. And so that's a little bit of what we were doing there. It's a little technical, but I mean, if I walk into a college class and I'm looking at my professor, he may know everything about 7th century English, but we just may be studying Chaucer. Right?
Right.
So I know, you know, he needs to know enough that he's the expert. I just need to hear about Chaucer today, because that's what I'm being tested on, and that's what I want to know about. So right. A good instructor should have a little bit of all these elements to him, but at the end of the day, a good lesson is getting what you want out of it and asking the student what he wants out of it, and then rephrasing it for him to have him get the most out of it in the long run, not just in the short run. That's really, if I can get a student to help them teach themselves, help them make themselves better, then I've done my job as a teacher. That's the key.
You know, it's interesting because I'm going to ask you something that I was not planning on going in, but I'm sure you're going to have a very interesting answer. I also want to mention, though, that the books that you just talked about are going to be or are already on the Golf Smarter website, and if you want to shop through Amazon,
we'll
have those books available. So if you want to go back and look through those,
yeah, I mean, those are all great books.
Go to golfsmarter.com and check out our Golfer's Mart,
yeah,
and those books will be there available for you. You know, I get emails. I had an email recently from a listener saying, you know, I just don't know if I can listen to Golf Smarter anymore because the teachers that you have on, the instructors that you talk to, seem to contradict one another all the time. Why can't we have one consistent message? And I wrote back to him and said, because if we had one consistent message, I would have finished doing Golf Smarter after 20 episodes. And here we are,
right,
at 200 episodes.
Right.
And I think that's the beauty of golf, is that there are so many interpretations of how it can be done.
Well, yeah, let me interject. I always tell people, you know, they'll say to me, I went to this pro and he told me that. I went to this pro and he told
exactly
me that. And I always say it's a parable of the three blind men that are told God's on the edge of town. And what they bump into is a circus. And they all bump into an elephant.
Elephant, yeah.
And they come back and they say, what's God like? Well, it's really rough. And the other one says, no, it's furry. And the other one says, no, it's very smooth and hard and kind of cold. And so, you know, one grabbed the tusk, one grabbed the skin, one grabbed the mane of the, or grabbed the tail, the hair on the, so they all have different versions of what God is. And maybe that explains all our religions today in some essence. You know, that's why we have so many religions. But at the core of it, I think there are some fundamental truths that the best teachers understand. And I think that's why they become the more sought after instructors. Mm-hmm. I think that's why they may or may not have the best results, but because knowing something is not just the same as imparting that information onto somebody. And imparting that information to somebody is not as the same thing as motivating that person to become something that they don't even know they're capable of becoming. Hence we have Lombardi. We got John Wooden. We have great coaches. The problem with instruction sometimes is we see in Golf Digest a lot of coaches. But we don't, what we go to and get our golf pro is a lesson, and is more of a teaching sort of experience. It's a 30 minutes.
Well, it's so interesting to me that what ends up happening is the golf teachers out there are the ones who got hooked on golf when they were young. They started playing competitively. They had success, and they thought, well, if I had success on the tour, or I had success, whatever level of touring it is or mm-hmm. competition it is, I can teach.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case.
Correct. Interestingly enough.
I think that you'll find that the C student is probably the best teacher because they're the most compassionate person, as opposed to an A student who just gets it automatically and just it's intuitive to them. How can they teach it when they really don't understand what they're doing?
Let me just tell you an interesting story that my listeners might find fascinating. Well, I think what you said to me just there was, I'd rather rephrase it, not the C student, the C competitor.
Okay.
Versus the A competitor. Wake Forest, 1958. Arnold Palmer's out playing golf as a freshman. Maybe it's 57 or 6, whatever year, 55, somewhere in the mid to late 50s. Probably mid-50s somewhere. And he's playing, I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's Davis Love's dad.
Wow.
Okay? And Arnie's hitting in the tree, slashing it out, making some putts, and Davis Love Sr.'s ripping it down the center of the fairway, hitting some greens, missing a few putts, doesn't get it up and down a few times. He gets done with the round. Arnold shoots 68. He shoots 75. And he's scratching his head. And he goes, huh. Arnold plays golf, and I practice playing golf. What he was saying was, I'm out there trying to fix my swing and fix my game, and Arnold's just out playing golf. Okay? So it's rare that you run into a golf professional that has the insight to understand clearly the difference between both and able to impart the skill sets that are different among both. And so I because you understand the golf swing doesn't necessarily mean I can make you a better player. And something we talked about the other day, and just maybe going out there a little bit from that concept, is that golf swings don't win golf tournaments. People do. There's never been a scorecard that says this golf swing won the tournament. Tiger Woods won the tournament. Lorena Ochoa won the tournament, you know.
And they don't have the same golf swing.
And they don't have the same golf swing. You know, this weekend, Lee Westwood won in Dubai, you know, and last weekend, Tiger won in Asia and Tiger won in Australia and et cetera. So golf swings are part of the equation, but they're not the whole equation, you know. So that's a different animal. It's part of the same animal. It's part of the same God, so to speak. You know, it's part of the tusk. It's part of the hair. It's part of the whatever. It's part of the skin. But it comes under the context of a bigger picture. And that's where, you know, like I try to share sometimes with people modalities of learning. I was fortunate in that I played multiple sports as a kid and was very efficient at other sports. It just so happened that I was slow and not very big. I was extremely intuitive. I had great hand-eye coordination. And I was competitive. And I was smart enough to know that the 240-pound guy that's bearing down on me, as tough as I was, is going to do some damage. And it's not going to be good.
No.
And I could do that so long. And, you know, once I got about 15, I started figuring out, 14, this is not the way to go. My 75-mile-an-hour fastball was pretty good when I was 13. But when I was throwing to 15-year-olds, that 70-mile-an-hour fastball was namas. That was bye-bye. That was hasta luego.
That was bye-bye over the fence.
That was
bye-bye.
Over that field, right. Yeah, right. So, you know, then I'm converted to utility, you know, fielder, and I was an average hitter. So down the line, you know, I saw that I had skill sets, but they weren't adequate for other sports. But I was surrounded myself, fortunately, with some good coaching, and I had good coaches that understood principles of learning. That I was able to absorb, and whether it was luck, whether it was a combination of me understanding that somehow, I don't know. I don't know where I got it from, but I realized that the way you practice is probably more important than what you practice. Truly.
So, practice with a purpose.
Certainly, practice with a purpose, but practice in a system that suits you and is consistent with other players have become highly efficient at their sport.
Can a good instructor help you develop that practice?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, again, there's another thing that comes before all this that you know, it's like the old joke, how do you change a light bulb? But first, the light bulb's got to want to change.
Right.
So, my wife, who I adore, always says, you know, I want to get better at golf. And she has some real talent, for starters. Before I even met her, she had some talent, but it was never applied. Did a little bit of effort, got to a certain point, and then let it go. And she always says, well, I want to get better. I said, honey, you're going to get better when you call me at 5 o'clock when you're leaving the office and say, dinner's going to have to be a little late. I have to hit a few golf balls. Right? So, you know, people say, what's the quickest way to get better? I say, join a men's club, join a women's club, find some reason to get you to the golf course more times than you are going now, and find yourself some reason to get into a competitive situation. And then hopefully inside of you somewhere, Fred says to himself, hey, I have that tournament Saturday morning. It's the member guest. I don't want to play very badly. I got to make sure I get out Tuesday morning. I start looking at my schedule. I start fitting in these things. And, you know, when am I going to hit balls? When am I going to practice? When am I going to get my, you know, practice round in or whatever it's going to be? You start thinking in a bigger picture that precedes that moment of truth when you got to go out and play. You know, the job's done before you get there.
So it's in every sport. Do you really believe that playing competitively is going to help you get better?
Absolutely.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody that's ever been successful has failed more than they've been successful.
Almost
invariably in everything. So you have to, and golf is like the king of failure.
Absolutely.
It's the king of failure.
I mean,
if you ask me, if I go
why
out,
we love it so much.
That's right. If I go out and shoot 68, well, we also love it because the average player can hit a shot that's just as great as Tiger. Once around, he can make a chip shot from 30 yards off the green. He can hole a 25.
He doesn't know
footer.
How he did it.
He
it
may
doesn't
really,
matter.
He may not repeat that with the same consistency, right? But he does it.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that we're all drawn to the game from that little, those little moments that we get to share that are really fun. We're also drawn to the game because it's a social game in some nature. There's a lot of reasons why we're drawn to the game. But the point is that people can learn behavioral things that'll help them improve their game that go beyond technique. And I'm convinced that if you get yourself to the golf course, go out and compete more often. The thing is, you're also surrounding yourself with people that may one day you may go out and play with somebody that plays great, and you just might learn something, right?
Sure.
You just might. You know, Woody Allen says, what, 80% of life is just showing up, or 90%, what did he say? 80, just show up. That's the thing. Just show up. Just find some compelling reason to get you there. And that's, you know, you can take all the lessons you want. And you'd be amazed that there are a lot of golf pros that didn't have that many golf lessons. They read it out of a book. I don't know how many pros I've met in my lifetime. I said, how did you get better at golf? I read Ben Hogan's book. I practiced that.
Hmm.
Really? Is that what you did? Yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed a nationwide tour player. He's like, who was your teacher growing up?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Never took lessons.
Right.
You're kidding.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And when I was at the President's Club and I was following around, no, I was at the Schwab, and I was following around one of the players. Sorry, I'm blanking on his name right now, but I was talking to his wife. They live in Chicago in the off season. I said, so how often does he practice? You live in Chicago. How often does he practice during the off season?
Yeah, right.
She said, he doesn't.
Right.
What do you mean he doesn't practice? No, he just, you know, he'll work on it for about 6 weeks and he gets bored. And then when it's
That's old
time,
school.
God. And he's still, like, you know, playing at the Schwab Cup Championship?
Right. Well, that's old school. I mean,
sorry,
you know, the older guys, there wasn't any funny season.
Right.
There wasn't Tiger's Target Shootout. There wasn't the race for Dubai. There wasn't, you know, the world championship of, you know, who won, you know, you get the guys all that won the four majors together. And, you know, there wasn't all these other outside events. There wasn't the skins game. There wasn't all this other stuff. Guys retired. I mean, it wasn't too long ago when you were a PGA Tour player and you also had a winner job.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, 30, 40 years ago, that was pretty standard.
Teaching.
Yeah, teaching. Yeah. When in 53, and that goes back quite a few years now, it's 150 years, but when Hogan won three majors in 53, he was the head pro at Tamarisk during the winter. And Gardner Dickinson was his assistant pro.
Mm-hmm.
A few named blasts from the past, but those are two pretty stout golfers
of
their time. And
also, amateur golf was very important those days.
Well, it was the game. It was the game. I mean, you know, it wasn't until Arnold Palmer till you could really change your shoes in the clubhouse. Maybe you were. And I tell you what, almost until Arnold Palmer, till you were allowed in the clubhouse without an invitation. Wow. Think about it. I mean, that's the game. And I don't care whether you're white or black. It didn't make any difference. You were entertainment. That's it. You better understand that and get on with your business.
Yeah, you can't afford to be in here.
Yeah, we love coming out and watching you, and if we invite you in for a drink, great. And if we don't, see you later, bye. You know, golf, that's it wasn't that long ago. Golf had a little bit of that element to it, you know, and it's changed dramatically, you know, but and for a lot of good reasons. Because this is what we're talking about. Golf, and I want to bring it back to that, golf in its essence, and I've been all over the world. I've played tournaments all over the world, and invariably I'll get paid with a pair.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, too. I want to talk about
I got paired with the best cricket player. I'll get paired with the best, you know, tennis player, rugby player, hockey player, whatever sports that are more prevalent outside of our country than here. And in this state, I'll get paired with the best football player in a pro-am or some event. And it's amazing how much they struggle at golf. Less lately because it's more cool to play golf now than it was, say, even 20 years ago. It's kind of the in thing. I mean, especially with Hollywood. I mean, you see all these people, the directors and stuff. They're all. I mean, Mark Wahlberg,
mm-hmm.
who is just on fire with producing great TV shows and doing all sorts of interesting things in the entertainment business, is just mad about golf.
I mean, oh, is that right?
He's just rabid. You know,
Justin Timberlake.
Well, yeah, Justin Timberlake.
Golf,
right, exactly. And you know, and that's happened in the past. But I mean, it's very prevalent
and then, of
now.
Of course, the Haney Project, the whole thing.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's you know, because they understand, and I want to bring it to this. They understand there's something different about golf. It's more about it's less about golf swing than you think. It's more about who you are as a person.
Yeah,
and that's another thing too. I want to bring back to that golf lesson I talked about earlier. Not everybody's goal is to win the U.S. Open. You know, not everybody's goal is to shoot under 70. And a good instructor needs to understand that. You know, most people's goal is to go out and enjoy their round of golf. And as an instructor, I need to find out what that level of enjoyment is. You know, so what is that level of enjoyment? What will help them get that little bit more enjoyment out of their day? You know, and that's part of it too.
Let's talk about, because this is really valuable advice for most people who would like to have an instructor.
Right.
Don't know how to, I mean, yeah, you can just pick the most convenient one. There's a driving range down from you. There's a golf course near you. And they probably have a teaching pro there.
Yeah.
But is that necessarily the best instructor for you? What should someone be looking for when they're hunting, shopping for a golf instructor?
Good question. I want to say there's some sort of providence involved, you know, that the players that become extremely good, that reach potential way beyond what's potentially even imagined or even just glimpsed of maybe as a child or whatever, there's some that they connect with somebody along the way that changes their life, usually, or two. Mm-hmm. And usually they're golf pros. They're not always golf pros, but
right.
Usually they're golf pros.
Right.
Somebody gave them that extra that was missing in their makeup. You know, for Jack Nicklaus, it was probably the technical side because he sure had the competitive side. He sure had the ability to make the right decision in the moment. That's something you really cannot teach. Jack's greatest asset, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, was he very rarely made a bad decision on a golf course. And he was able to size up a golf tournament at that critical moment and make the right decision.
Now, was that necessarily the shot at the moment?
Yes.
Or was it the field, the conditions?
Everything. Everything. He was magical on that. I mean, you know, he knew how to rise to the occasion. You know, he very rarely, I mean, we can think back just glimmer. The last time he won a major was the Masters. The putt he made on 17 was just unbelievable. But he knew he had to make that putt. He did it. He also stood to the sun and said, you know, if we can get around this backside in around 30, we got a chance. And I think he shot 31 or 2 or whatever it was to win the golf tournament. He knew where he was in his place and in his time always. Always. I mean, almost to the point it was a little spooky, really. You know, I think it was a little spooky because he just did. He knew when to hit the burners and when not to hit the burners. No, because he would travel along at about 80%, you know, like a good guy at running a race car driver. You know, you don't always jack it up to the highest RPM to win the race. You know, you find your spot and then you hit it. And he knew how to hit it. And he did it invariably well. You know, so but he found the technical side thing from Jack Grout, right? He understood his golf game. He really understood his game. And Jack Grout gave him a golf swing that wasn't really a golf swing that we'd really seen before. It was sort of a new age golf swing. It was sort of a newer golf swing. It wasn't the standard swing that we'd seen with Hogan, or it wasn't the standard swing we'd seen with other great players maybe of that earlier era. You know, of Sam Snead or, you know, players that go back. Jack had a more modern, what we call a modern day game. It was a little bit more physical. It was yet physical but concise. He was a big man. You know, Jack was a much bigger guy when he first came on tour. They used to tease him a lot. He was a very heavy guy. He was strong. Pudgy. He was big and strong. Yeah, big pudgy guy. And he used, and his swing evolved. And if you're a technician and you watch his game kind of evolves to his body. So he was able to adapt, but he, you know, to know thyself is divine. He knew what he was capable of. He knew where he could go, and he understood the principles of making the ball cause and effect and what he could do. And then he left it there, and then he went out and played golf, and he was able to size up the situation. Because Jack, when he's on a golf course, played another example. A friend of mine's playing with Jack Nicklaus, and he went to school with one of his sons at North Carolina. Interestingly, his sons went to the Carolinas to play golf. Jack was Ohio Buckeye, but his sons ended up going to the Carolinas to play. tough act to follow, I guess, your dad at Ohio State, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Todd McGrew is his name. Good. I played with him down in Africa years ago. And we were sitting around having dinner one night, and he was telling me about how he'd spend Easter with the Easter or Thanksgiving, because he lived in Texas, a little long ways for him to go home, and he'd spend Easter with, or I think it was Easter a lot, with the Nicklauses down in the Nicklaus, what I'd call compound.
Compound, you know, sure.
Yeah. And so they're out, and it's Angelo, I think was his caddy at the time, and Todd, and one of his sons, I think it was Jack Jr. maybe. I forget which son it was, the oldest one. And they're out playing, and McGrew comes across the shot, pin tucked up behind the bunker, a little wind in his face, and it's about 150 yards, and McGrew stands there, and he tries to knock down a 7-iron, and they're out just hitting a bunch of shots, getting a little late round in, and everybody's kind of having fun, and Todd hits the shot kind of badly, and then he hits another shot and hits that badly, and he says, Jack, he says, how would you hit this shot? I'm sure he probably didn't call him Jack, probably called him Mr. Nicklaus. How would you hit the shot? And so Angelo throws Jack a ball, and Jack grabs a 6-iron out, and he chokes down on it, and he blades it over the back of the green. So he says, he grabs another club, grabs a 7-iron, takes a big rip at it, tries to get it up in the air, and it gets up in there, just gets about up, just short of the green, comes down, buries in the front of the lip. So now Jack is kind of thumbing around, and he goes back to the 6-iron, and he's going to cut one in this time, and he pull hooks it. And he looks over at Todd, and he puts the club back in the, and he's, in all seriousness, he says to Todd, he says, I have no idea. And he walks away. Now, this is a guy, this is like, you know, this is like 19, maybe 1981, you know, he wasn't that far out of the prime of his game, maybe 80, you know, this is like in, you know, early 80s, right. Somewhere, maybe 83 or 84. It wasn't like he was, you know, he still had a major to win. He wasn't all the way, his game wasn't done. But the important thing is here, and several issues, I think, and it's good for the average player to maybe understand this. He was very comfortable with Jack Nicklaus. His ego wasn't damaged because he couldn't hit that shot.
Okay. Jack Nicklaus was comfortable with Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah, right, yeah, right, okay. Right. Jack Nicklaus was comfortable with Jack Nicklaus.
Right, right.
I couldn't hit that shot. Second thing is he didn't worry about things he didn't need to worry about. End of story. He would get focused on things he knew. He knew he had skill sets that would do certain things that could produce certain results, and those are the things, when he found that groove, he hit it and go. It's like a racehorse, you know. You find your pace, you find your track, you find whatever it is, and boom, you know, that's how you do it. A good jockey gets that out of a horse. And so Jack was his own best jockey. He understood what he needed to do to get the job done. And he didn't worry about unnecessary things. And technically, it wasn't about golf swing. It was about hitting certain shots, and I'll figure this out some other time. I don't need to worry about this right now. And, you know, we all, so the point there is that, you know, we all get caught up. We hit a bad shot. Oh, my day's done. I'm going to hit a bad shot. Well, no, not necessarily. You know, just because you hit one bad shot doesn't mean the next shot's going to be bad. Unfortunately for the amateur golfer, that's how the day starts. Right. You know, Nicklaus often, and I hate to beat a dead horse with Jack, but he people say, well, you bogeyed the first three holes. How did that make you feel? He goes, well, if you look at my records, I bogey about four holes around. My thinking was, I'm standing on the fourth tee, I only had one more bogey for the day. I had some birdies to make. Well, how's that for changing?
Yeah.
You know, changing your attitude.
There you go.
You know, and that's another thing I'd like to bring up here is what I often teach. Go ahead.
And we'll get to it.
Okay.
But we've reached our limit for this show.
Oh, we have.
And you haven't answered my question yet about finding a teacher.
Oh.
And, you know, because we have a lot of people who start the game in their 30s and their 40s and
right.
their 50s and their 60s, and they become listeners of Golf Smarter. They're always looking for something. And I think this is a really important piece of advice that we're going to get to on our next episode.
Okay.
We're going to do that on a members-only show.
Okay.
And so I want you to come back.
Right,
as a matter of fact, we're going to keep recording.
Okay.
This is so much fun because, again, when we had lunch the other day, I had this whole sheet of stuff that you were saying. It's like, awesome, we got to cover that. Awesome, we got to cover it. I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we can easily go on for a
right,
long time.
Sure.
So
I went off on a tangent here. But
that's okay.
Okay.
That's why we have 30 minutes to do this, and we'll cover this on the next episode.
Great. All right. Well, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Fred.
Yeah, and appreciate your time, John. And again, if you're a Golf Smarter member, or you should become one now, you'll get to hear the next 35 minutes of this conversation, and free-flowing it is. He's really an interesting guy. I really enjoyed talking to him, and we just kept going and going. And hopefully he will come back. And that's going to be precipitated really on you and what kind of feedback you give him and questions you have for him so we can get him to come back onto the show. Want to congratulate our winner of our drawing for a free membership to Golf Smarter for members only. And that goes to David Hires of Auburn, Washington. David, you are going to get to hear the full episode next week with our conversation with John Grund. Plus, you'll be able to go back into our archives and hear 200 episodes that you may not have heard already. That will be because you have complete access to the archives as a Golf Smarter member, and you'll also be able to take advantage of some of our discounts that we have in the Golfer's Mart. And you'll get a new episode, full episode, every week, unlike a non-member who gets a full episode every other week. Now, we're going to give another product away out of our Golfer's Mart. We're going to give away the Tour Tempo Micro Player. We've moved a lot of these, and the folks over there, John Novosel, inventor of this product, really appreciates what the Golf Smarter community has done to support him. We're going to have a giveaway. Deadline for entry at golfsmarter.com is going to be December 27th, 2009. We'll announce the winner of the show on the first episode of 2010. 2010. Oh, my gosh. We're there already. Man, the golf year goes by fast, doesn't it? Anyway, congratulations again. Winner David Hires of Auburn, Washington. You have won a Golf Smarter membership. Now, the Tour Tempo Microplayer, as we talked about, we're going to give another one away. If you are a Golf Smarter member, you can go back and listen in to the conversations that we had. You can probably pick up a little bit of the free one that we did as well with John Novosel. But this Tour Tempo Microplayer normally sells for $99.95. Our Golf Smarter members, you can get it for $69.95 with the coupon code TTMP001. And that coupon code is only good for the rest of December. Now that we're in December, you only have a few weeks left, and we don't have many left to sell. So take advantage of this great deal and purchase one now. Even if we have some left in 2010, they will be at the full price of $99.95. Hey, when I give you guys a price that you can't find anywhere else, like our Click Gear three-wheel push cart, we're selling for only $179 for our members, and that includes tax and shipping. Do me a favor, please. Don't go into a retailer saying, hey, Golf Smarter got it for $179. That's the price I want it for, because what happens, I appreciate you listening, but when you do that to a retailer, the retailer goes back to the manufacturer and says, who's Golf Smarter and why are they getting a better price than we are? So what happens is we don't have very many click gears left to sell at $179. Actually, we only have a few left. So if you are thinking about getting a click gear push cart, now's the time to do it. Become a member and take advantage of this phenomenal offer, because that one's not going to last any longer. As soon as we fulfill the few that we had to get rid of, that's it. So don't tell anybody our secrets, okay? Please, I'd appreciate it. Now, if you'd like to become a member of Golf Smarter, we're going to have a special offer this December. We did it during the June month for Father's Day, and we're doing it for the holiday season. Only $35 gets you the worldwide membership, Plan A, for 6 months, and it is going to be just through the month of December. So go to golfsmarter.com and click on Join Now and become a member for only $35, and it'll get you complete access to our archives and these great deals as long as they last. Hey, I want to say how sorry I am for everything that happened to Tiger in the past week. So glad that he came out of it okay, and that everything is intact and he will be back to play. But, you know, I'm like most of us. I have a dark side that appreciates some of the jokes that have been whipping through the web. Not that I want to dwell on them, but there was one that I really liked and wanted to share with you. It's not going to be our quote, but it is a great joke. I'm sick, okay? I'm sick. Leave me alone. So, what's the difference between a car and a golf ball? Well, Tiger can drive a golf ball over 300 yards. Oh. All right, we close with an important quote that came out of our conversation today with John Grund. So many of us look to the magazines and the TV shows of what our swing is supposed to look like and who we're supposed to copy in our swing. But he was so dead on when he reminded us, golf swings don't win tournaments, people do. If you have any questions, quotes, or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.